Hi, I'm Paul Scheel, and you're listening to the Public Relations Podcast, Smoke Signal. In this episode of Smoke Signal Podcast, I'm pleased to be joined by Scott Brinker, aka Chief Martech. Some of you may be familiar with his blog, Chief Marketing Technology, which is best known for its Martech graphic that maps the marketing technology landscape. First launched in 2011 with 150 tools, the latest 2023 version was launched last month and features an amazing 11,038 Martech tools. This exponential rise in Martech, which is mirrored in Comtech, got me thinking about how do marketing and communication professionals actually keep up. So who better to discuss this than the author of the flagship Martech map? Scott Brinker's day job is VP Platform Ecosystems at HubSpot. He's also chair of the Martech conference and he's joining me from Florida. Scott, thanks for coming on to talk about all things Martech.
Great to be here with you, Paul. Love to chat Martech.
So for those who haven't seen the Martech map, that you create, and I'll post a link on the blog. Talk us through the background, why you started it, and how it's grown and evolved over the years.
Sure. So my background was kind of a weird hybrid, you know, a software engineer by background, but ultimately ended up in the business of helping marketers implement their digital systems. And so for years, there was always this like gap between the worlds of marketing and IT and software, which clearly, you know, had to collapse as, everything that marketing does is now connected or driven or powered some way by something digital. So, but, you know, if we go back a few years, like even a lot of senior marketing executives, highly dubious about what's this tech stuff? Do I really need to care about this? And so I created the first version of that MarTech map to like show, hey, this is the range of different products that you probably have in your organization. There's a lot of them, you know, maybe you should think about having, you know, like operations or MarTech people on your team to help manage this. And at the very first version of that in 2011 had around 150 products, which at the time seemed enormous, vast, like, oh my goodness, how can we keep up with all of this? You know, and then, I kept going back to it year over year to just revisit like, okay, well, there's more vendors here and some new categories here, you know, and next thing you know, it was like 1,000 and then 2,000 and then 4,000. And folks who look at the one we just released last, this May, it's now like over 11,000. It's crazy.
Yes. I guess you never expected it to.
Oh my goodness, I don't think I would have signed up for this project if you told me what it was going to be.
But now, today, it's more than just a poster on a wall, right? Like, it's an interactive map. You can go in there, you can look at areas of interest for you, and I guess for the PR professionals there, there's SEO, content marketing, influencers, you know, data visualization. So is that how you hope people use the tool, is to really dive in and understand what's available out there?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would disclaim that, you know, the map itself and even the interactive tool we have for it is still a very high level. We call this like the very top of the funnel. If you just want to get a high level sense of, you know, what is the landscape of, you know, technologies and who are the different players in them, you know, but yeah, that's about as deep as it goes, you know, like once you actually are trying to go down the process of like, you know, evaluating technologies that you might consider adding to your company or comparing them, you know, yeah, that's a whole different level. So we don't go there. To be honest, I mean, still, I would say the majority of the value is frankly just in a conversation piece and in a starter of like, hey, listen, you know, for all the talk of consolidation in this industry, and, you know, you'll certainly talk to vendors who will tell you, oh, yeah, we do it all, just buy our stuff, and it's all in this one box, and it's fine. Yeah, I think it's just interesting to see that, okay, actually, the reality of the market has continued to have an enormous amount of diversification. And just being aware of that diversification, I think, informs how we think about our technology strategy in the broader marketing universe.
And so when you step back and look at that growth over the last decade or so, what do you attribute that growth to? Is it as simple as the barriers to entry have got lower because technology's got better?
So, right, there's supply side and demand side. on the supply side, absolutely, between, you know, things like cloud infrastructure, like it's now, I mean, it literally costs you pennies to be able to like stand up, you know, a state of the art, you know, like cloud system, you know, globally, because it's all in the back of, you know, Amazon and Google Cloud and Azure. And of course, there's all these open source projects, so you can like stand on the shoulders of giants or, you know, all sorts of the fundamental system. It's just like, from a technology perspective, the starting point, you know, where you can begin with a software project these days is just miles beyond anything we had before. I also think, you know, as the world has gone more into, I mean, again, this is kind of digital marketing. This is a little bit meta here, but digital marketing has made it feasible for smaller companies and startups to be able to like reach initial audiences and start to grow a customer base without having a massive field sales force, for instance. So there's just a bunch of these things that have allowed, exactly as you said, essentially have like lowered the barriers to entry. If someone has an idea for what they believe is going to be a valuable software tool for marketers, they can kind of get into the market with it. But there's the other side of this, right? It doesn't matter if people build it, if nobody buys it, you know? And I think what we've seen here is just incredible demand, partly because marketing, I feel like, and let me just say this. I mean, I have so much respect for everyone in the marketing universe. Like, I can't think of any other profession that has gone through so much change and so much expansion of scope over this past decade, two decades. And so like the scope of marketing has expanded. It's much broader across all these different channels that didn't even exist before. You know, the mission of a broader customer experience. The spaces in which we're operating aren't standing still. They're constantly changing. I mean, like we have this happening right now with generative AI and what is this going to mean? No, search engine optimization and paid search marketing, you know, all sorts of other things. And so marketers are always like right in the middle of that. And as a result, they are always open to like, okay, wow, things are changing, or, you know, there's this new tactic or this new channel. Is there some technology that can help me achieve this? And so there's this symbiosis where, there are lots of MarTech startups eager to tackle those new challenges and a lot of demand among marketers to figure out how do we do this?
Yeah, that fascinates me, that idea of communications marketing, that breadth of what you need to be across. So how do you think, when it comes to MarTech specifically, how do professionals keep up? Like, is there a risk of oversaturation and just paralysis because I don't even know where to start?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and two different challenges here. So one is just trying to keep up with the pace of change and the scope of what's out there. And let me just raise my hand here and I'd say that, you know, I can't keep up with it all. Like, you know, nobody can. There's just too much changing too quickly. And I think at some level you have to make peace with the fact that there's no way you're going to have the vision of everything that's going on around this. What matters is, you know, do you get good at being able to tune in to the particular trends or things that are like most relevant or impactful for your customers, you know, for your go-to-market channels? And even that's challenging, but at least, it provides a little bit of narrowing there. And then there's this other thing of like, okay, well, even if I'm then focused on, yeah, this is the change or this is the capability I need to develop, when you go to start to look at vendors who can help you with that, yes, there's a saturation, if not oversaturation, of just a tremendous number of choices out there. There's a lot of like heuristics you can come up with to, again, kind of narrow that field quickly. But to just be upfront about it, I think this is something that, to deal with this expansion of scope in marketing and communications, it's very hard to have any one individual who is fantastic at all of this stuff. You know, they're fantastic, you know, at the creative. They understand the messaging. I've got the analytics of this. Oh, I can do the like tech, you know, configuration, you know. It's just, there's so much that I think you really do need to see marketing teams as generally just that, a team of people who bring different strengths together. And it's not that any one person, you know, has to be fantastic at all of it. What I get is a team that collectively covers the set of skills and capabilities that modern marketing now demands.
Yeah. So I read a bit of a synopsis. I think you've got an upcoming book coming out, if it's not out already. And in that, you make this interesting kind of, I guess, thesis around, and this comes back to your comment about demand side for these tools. A lot of the demand, when I think about it, and I think a lot of people think about it, is how do we increase efficiency, right? How do we make something we do every day quicker and easier to do? But you're kind of, I guess, repositioning that in that this MarTech and automation of these tools is also about innovation, also about growth. Can you talk to us a bit more about how you see that playing out in practice?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is kind of the long arc, you know, what we've been on with the world going digital is just all things digital. One of their greatest advantages, they're just incredibly malleable, you know, like reconfigure the common phrase, right? Like reconfiguring bits is very easy. Reconfiguring atoms, things in the physical world, not so easy. But in many ways, a lot of our mindset is still very rooted in these things of like, okay, once we create this or we set this process or we do it this thing, and we don't want to change it, very easy for us to develop an inertia, you know, around things we do. And you get lots of, you know, behavioral and psychological reasons for this. But I think one of the things that's exciting is the technology to be able to change our digital environment, not just things like our website, but even ways in which things flow throughout our organization, the capabilities we empower individual marketers on our team, the data analysis capabilities, you know, we increasingly democratize. I mean, all these things give this malleability that the digital world has to offer. It's like empowering more and more people. But so that gets us into a mode where it's like, you know, specifically for this book, The New Automation Mindset. Yeah, it's not just about, okay, this is the process, we're going to automate it, and that's it, and don't touch it. This ability to say like, oh, as people start to creatively experiment with like, how can we do this better? Or, you know, for this particular activity or this particular, you know, set of customers we're working with or feedback we've gotten, like, can we change this process? Can we have a version of this process that, you know, works for a particular subset in a different way? That the tools are actually making that feasible for people to do. There's a whole bunch of other things of like, oh, well, as you expand the number of people who are doing all these things, how do you prevent that from becoming complete and total chaos? And that's even more of the book is like, you do need governance around this. You do need guardrails, but that's kind of what makes it exciting. It's like, we are empowering more and more people to have greater and greater capabilities. And while that presents new challenges for us for how do we run a business in an organized fashion with that capability, it's also, like the creativity and the productivity that can be unlocked from that is also pretty exciting too.
But then I guess on the flip side, you have this idea that a lot of those tools that are brought in underutilized, right? We don't utilize the full extent of the technology that we purchase.
That's true. Although I think it's interesting. So there's a whole bunch of different things that get entangled in this. There's one like, okay, why doesn't a particular tool get used to its full extent? Is it legitimately, we actually only need to use a particular slice of it for what we do? And the fact, I mean, it's not like waste in software doesn't have the same mechanics, like, right? If I'm using a tool for like 10% of what that tool could do, but that 10% is the exact 10% I need and what I'm paying for the total tool more than justified by, you know, that 10%, who cares about the other 90%? It's not really going to waste. It's, you know, it's a construct in the mind. Then there's other cases where it's like, no, we have this tool and we actually should be using more of this, but we're not. Okay, well, why aren't we? Is it because, you know, we haven't trained people? Have we not created the right incentives? Is the priority of relative to what we'd be doing with that tool relative to what we want people doing instead, you know, out of whack? Is there a problem with the tool, right? I mean, not tools aren't perfect. Maybe it's like, hey, you know, as we started to use this, the user experience really sucks. And as a result, it's just very hard for us to get people use this. I mean, I think it really is worth like digging into these different things. And that's not to say you won't find tools where you're like, you know, we got this, we thought we were going to use it, and then afterwards we decide we didn't. Okay, kick it to the curb, jettison it. I think part of that thing we were talking about earlier of, you know, this constant change and, you know, people adopting new tools and trying new things, there is the other side of that, which is over time there's drift and some of the things you were doing before or some of the experiments you tried that ultimately didn't pan out, they should sunset, they should go away, but I don't know. Am I rambling too much? I'm like,
no, not at all. I mean, I'm just thinking, This one comes without notice because I literally read it yesterday and I came across it, so you mightn't have even seen it. But there was a recent Gartner study that found 2/3 of CFOs believe that the spending in their MarTech has not met their expectations. And they talk to this idea of there's going to be this tech stack dump because of that. And as economic conditions kind of get tougher, that spending is going to come under more scrutiny within organizations. And effectively, we could end up going back to simpler things like spreadsheets and things like that, where we don't have to pay for them. So it's just interesting. I think what you're saying is exactly right, right? There's obviously always reasons why you're not using those tools, and they should always be reviewed, but it kind of seemed quite a high number that 2/3 of CFOs believed that this MarTech and kind of tech spending was not hitting the mark.
You know, it's funny. This is anecdotal too. I swear I'll get to the point. Is I just saw somebody put together a map of all the different technologies, and actually it's not all of them, but it's a lot of them that procurement uses, you know, and it's this massive map of like just hundreds of like procurement technologies. And it's funny because, right, procurement has been one of those groups that are like, yeah, we really need to consolidate, you know, the vendor ecosystem around, you know, MarTech. And then you look at actual procurement and just hint, FYI, I've seen maps for like fintech and the accounting and the finance, and they're massive too. So anyways, this is not to say that there shouldn't be the discipline of like evaluating everything we're spending money on in our tech stack, you know, and asking the hard questions of like, is this meeting our expectations? Is it performing? Is it working for us? I certainly think in a tighter economic times, so everybody gets aligned on the incentives to be just much more disciplined about that. And I think it's a great thing. But I also think it's very easy when you're not the person on the hook for delivering the actual outcomes to say, yeah, you don't need, like, marketing, you don't need all those tools. Just deliver the outcomes we want and you can do it with two tools. You know, it's like, well, you know, is marketing qualified to turn around and say, finance, listen, this whole collection of fintech stuff you have, that seems like a real mess. Can you just boil that down to one or two products? It's like, well, you don't really know what you're talking about there. Well, you know, yeah. So I'm probably going to get in trouble with my CFO for that rant, but...
So you touched on this earlier, and it's not a podcast in 2023 without talking about AI. So does AI potentially destroy this whole market? Does it make the technology obsolete, or does it, I guess, transform it and reform what we kind of is currently out there? Where do you see, how do you see AI playing with the current MarTech map of 11,000 plus tools?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the only intellectually honest question answer is like, I don't know. I have some early guesses. I think two things are true. One, I think it's going to be incredibly disruptive to the existing MarTech map, because I do think this is, I think a lot of things are going to change. I think the way we go to market is going to change, the way we engage with customers. You know, there's, I mean, it's not that hard to see a non-science fiction-y future where it's not just us engaging directly with customers, but it's increasingly our bots engaging with buyer bots and, you know, all sorts of, you know, agents working on behalf of both buyers and sellers. I mean, this would have sounded like a fantasy, you know, like a year ago. And now you look at this and you're like, yeah, no, actually this will happen within this decade. And so I think there's going to be a lot of churn. The question is, will the net impact of that be a much, much smaller MarTech landscape? Possibly. My opinion at the moment is I don't think so. And part of this is because, you know, one of the things AI is doing in the software world is yet another thing to dramatically reduce the barriers to entry. I mean, the ability now for like people to leverage AI in building products, you know, would seem to be able to extrapolate and say, actually, I think we're probably going to see a lot more software products in the world. And maybe even asymptotically, every company to some degree becomes a software company. But what will be the market configuration there? Will there be a couple giants with ecosystems around it? Will it be a long tail? Will most companies start to roll their own MarTech by like pulling in different APIs and services through AI? I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ways it could go. And genuinely, I do not know. I am absolutely fascinated to see how this plays out. But I feel pretty confident it's going to be a lot of change in this industry.
But not quite peak MarTech yet.
It's just hard to know. I mean, again, it's like the landscape that exists today is a product of just a certain set of market factors, both how software was built, how it was bought, what marketers were trying to do. I think all three of those factors are in a position where they could change within the next year, 2 years, 3 years. And so, I mean, let me put it to you this way. So one of the things is like when people talk about consolidation in the MarTech space, the truth is there's actually a ton of consolidation that's been happening for years. You know, I mean, all the news headlines you read about this company acquires that company, you know, is very real. I can also tell you having, you know, every year we like do the full analysis of all the companies on our landscape. And every year there's a big chunk that just shut down and go away, you know. And so when you think about the forces of consolidation, they've been hard at work in MarTech. It's just what makes it complex is while there's all these forces, you know, that drive consolidation in the MarTech industry, over on the other side, there's all these like forces that, you know, facilitate and encourage the startups, you know, that keep refreshing that. And so it's always been a question of like, at what point in time do the forces of consolidation outweigh, you know, the forces, you know, of the startup side of it? And it's every year would have been hard for me to predict. Will next year be the year where that balance shifts? Given where we're headed into with all this disruption around AI, I'm like, okay, wow, hard to say. There's like going to be strong forces on both sides of that equation. How will it net out?
And how does this fit to your day job at HubSpot?
Oh, well, I mean, so this is the wonderful thing. One of the reasons I joined HubSpot is even as I joined them in 2017, and by then the MarTech landscape had already grown to like thousands of products. And I was actually one of those thousands of products. I had a startup that, you know, had built a SaaS for interactive content. Great little product, but it doesn't exist on its own. It needs to integrate with, you know, larger marketing automation or CRM platforms. And I just found that like for all this innovation of all these companies across MarTech, the common problem across all of them was like, listen, these individual pieces are great, but a marketer needs these things to work together, and they shouldn't have to do that work themselves. It really should fall on the large platform companies to do the work, to work with their partners, to build a coalition, to build an ecosystem, to do that integration work behind the scenes. And so that's why I joined HubSpot was, you know, where the founders were very committed to that, are still very committed to that. All this is to say, yeah, my hobby and my professional job do tend to feed into each other.
Well, that's been really fascinating. I really appreciate you taking the time. I imagine it's been quite busy after releasing the MarTech map, and we can clearly see your passion for all things MarTech. So it's great to have you there and collating this, which must be a big job each kind of year. So thank you for coming on. It's been really fascinating.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
You've been listening to Smoke Signal, Australia's first podcast dedicated to the public relations sector. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and do share the podcast with others in the profession. I'm Paul Cheel, and I look forward to continuing the conversation on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks for listening.